are listening to the OpenPaddock.net podcast, motorsports commentary for fans by fans.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the 111.11 podcast for OpenPag.net, or episode 72 for those of you keeping score at home. Sean joining you as always this week with Mike.
Good evening.
And with our IndyCar writer, Chrissy.
Hello.
Yay. So we're all here. Doug, still on holiday. Much deserved. So lots to talk about this evening. Bunch of stuff to go through today because we had the State of the Series address for the IZOD IndyCar Series and really the IndyCar sanctioning body as a whole. We have some Formula One stuff to discuss, Le Mans and World Rally. Quite a bit of news that we can crunch down in just a few minutes. So the order for those who like to fast forward will be Rally, Le Mans, Formula One, and IndyCar will be last with a majority of the time slot. But it was released this week that now OpenPaddock.net will qualify for the Budweiser shootout.
I think everybody and their brother qualifies for the Budweiser shootout. It's like the rookie of the year going back through the year 2000 qualifies, and then anybody who's ever won a points-paying event at Daytona qualifies, and I don't know if they'll have enough spots for all the people that qualify.
Nice.
Apparently we qualify. We're in on a technicality. I think it's because you won an iRacing event there.
Nice. Yes, that's true. I'm very good. I'm very good at that. So I could actually take a car and theoretically win. So because
speaking of theoretical wins, theoretically, the Colts did not win this week. Congratulations to your Jets, Sean.
Thank you. Yes, I won the Open Paddock Bowl, and it was well deserved. Just like to thank the players, the coaching staff. It was a very nerve-wracking game and a tough battle, but as many have referred to him, the gas bag from New York backed up his talk. I obviously don't think that, but I think he's a perfect fit for the team.
Did you hear it came out this week that Tom Brady, instead of watching the first half of the game, was at a Broadway musical?
Well, that's fine.
When your coach was asked about it, what he thought about Brady not watching the first half of the game, you know what he said?
What's that?
He said, Peyton Manning would have watched the first half of the game.
Nice. Nice, yeah. And actually, I heard that Tom Brady currently is undergoing hair extensions or hair treatment because he has, that nice haircut of douchebaggery that he wears about is, not going according to plan and costs a lot of money. So, that's fine. I wouldn't expect him to watch the game. Apparently, he's too cool for school. And just like Coach Rex says, I'd like to see him try to do something else in a system that does not belong to Bill Belichick. So, look at Matt Cassel. That's as far as it goes. So, So, we'll look forward to the Patriots. Hopefully, we can beat them. I'm pretty sure that if we can beat them, at least the AFC side of the house will be ours. However, if we lose to them, it will be another year of wishing that Coach Belichick was not associated with the Patriots anymore.
Yeah. Well, and a sad note out to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Poor Doug. Doug,
we're very sorry to see what happened, but yeah, nothing good was happening in the West this year, the AFC West or the NFC West. Wow, New Orleans. What happened there? Anyway,
that's what we call
this is a racing podcast.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Let's get to the actual racing before we bore our IndyCar writer. who also, conveniently enough, was on the Jets bandwagon this weekend. So,
I was.
That hurt, Chris.
And I think I lost a few followers.
That's okay. So it's not worth it. Super Bowl. A Super Bowl for the New York Jets is worth about 10 followers. So once you get to that cap, then let me know and we'll change things. So, all right. Well, let's look at the WRC first, and we do have Sweden coming up in the first part of February. And wow, I told everybody back a while ago that when all this driver news stuff started happening, it was going to be bam, 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 quick. And my goodness, they proved me right. But we have a huge lineup of cars and drivers on stage, and it's going to start off with the news coming yesterday that Kimi Raikkonen has finally confirmed his Citroën deal. The team that was formerly known as Citroën Juniors has all been broken up, and now they have the Citroën. Well, for Kimi Raikkonen, it will be the Ice One rally team. That's going to be a program that he runs. He and his co-driver will be the solo car in that effort. And they got their intent to enter Sweden in right at the buzzer, if you will. And then finally, we had Petter Solberg get a DS3 as well for his privateer team, the Petter Solberg World Rally Team. And he is not on the entry list at the moment. However, at the time, his papers were slightly short, slightly after the deadline. But they said, you know, how can we say no to a driver like Petter Solberg? And I say, hey, you know, that's the same thing that I've been saying about Citroën. How could you say no to Petter Solberg? And it looks like finally a deal's materialized that will keep him in a Citroën next year, in the same Citroën that everybody else will have. So a legitimate chance for victory for him. And also Kimi will have the same DS3. Not so much for him from the victory side of the house. But that left the question, where is our friend Peter Van Merkstein, the first Citroën DS3 driver that was not Sebastian Loeb or Sebastian Ogier to commit? And I actually got in touch with the team yesterday after I found out what had happened. And I'm, you know, because I was thinking along with a lot of people, where's Van Merkstein fit? He was first. And basically, they got back and said that they had a good conversation with Citroën, and that they, you know, they understand the situation with Petter Solberg. They had agreed to sit out Sweden for Petter Solberg. In exchange, they were able to secure a ride for Argentina instead. So he's still got a ride. He's still got a season planned, but it will unfortunately not start in Sweden as we first thought, and it will move over into Argentina. So he's still there. So it looks like we're gonna have five Citroëns running about, and so good on them. All that stuff hit yesterday. You know, at the last second, right before the deadline for the entries. So then
before we go on, that's two departures from what Citroën had said earlier, because at first they were saying there weren't going to be any non-factory entries.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems that two will be run by privateer teams. Is that a correct assessment?
Yes, it's going to be – they have the two factory cars, and then they have the – what will eventually be three privateer entries. I don't know if Van Merkstein Motorsport is going to be the sole is going to be the one running their Citroën while the other two run theirs. Now obviously this will come with full logistics from Citroën, full support with the car, but it also means that they're not going to get their car. So yeah, you bought it, fair. But you don't get it. So it looks as though, you know, they'll be in a kind of stealing the word from Formula One, but a Parc Fermé status within the team, and then the team will move the cars, and then the drivers and the crews will just show up and drive them and work on them. So
yeah, kind of kind of like the A1GP model, it looks like, because basically, yeah, just like you're saying, Citroën shall prepare and maintain the cars.
Yes. So, yeah, interesting. A little bit of sketchiness, but I don't think it'll be too big of an issue. But on the flip side, we also had Danny Sordo finally confirmed at Mini, so he will pair with Chris Meek. That takes away the all-star lineup, if you will, that is Mini, mainly, you know, Chris Meek's a big name in the UK, also, you know, within the IRC communities, and, you know, has some respect levels within, you know, the WRC, but he's not a proven world championship driver. So that's why they've put him kind of, you know, that's why they kind of say, well, we don't really have an all-star team, but he is an IRC champion. And they also now have Danny Sordo, who carries an impressive resume. However, comma, that means that he doesn't have a win. So, and
yeah, that'll be interesting to see, because I would be interested to see which one ends up winning more points this season.
It's a real shootout. I think it'll be a real shootout. I think Sordo. I'll give the edge to Sordo for now on the points total. But I think that, you know, I think Meek will make things interesting, and I think he'll adapt well. He adapted well in the IRC, in the Peugeot, and I think, you know, I think he's a great talent, and he'll be able to mature and you know, eventually become a regular, maybe, you know, I wouldn't go as far as say podium finisher, but, you know, top five, easy. Mm-hmm. We also have the new Firm Power Tools team. I don't know if that's Coupier or Kuipers, or I'm not even gonna try because I'm not familiar with it. I haven't heard it, so I can't repeat it. But he's now joined the Ford ranks. We knew that he was going to be in a Fiesta, and he had a limited schedule in the Fiesta WRC. However, the Firm Power Tools came on as a primary sponsor, floated some extra cabbage his way. And now he's going to be able to contest, I think it was 10 or 11 rounds of the, it was 11 rounds of the World Rally Championship. He's going to be missing, I think it was Australia and one other, I don't know if he was Argentina too, but he'll definitely be missing Australia. So yet another car for Ford to pull from. I mean, they've got a bajillion of these things, you know, laying around apparently, or really doing well to build them, because also, I mean, we have for Sweden alone, we've got Khalid Al-Qasimi, Kim Block, the Kuipers guy, we've got, we've got a host of them. We've got close to the 10, I think. They said they were going to run on the World Championship stage. So that's, you know, I think that's going to give Ford a huge advantage over the Citroën cars, because you have five Citroëns to, you know, damn near 10 Fords. And I think the thing that will really, but I don't know if it will be, I don't know how much it'll make, though, because some of these guys don't have world championship caliber, are not world championship caliber drivers, whereas at least at Citroën, you know, you've got Petter Solberg, you know, you've got Ogier, you know, you've got Loeb. So, I mean, those are the three best in, you know, at the moment, probably the three best in the business with the best car. Or at least with the best manufacturer. So I think maybe it might not be as much as an issue as what I'm playing it to be, but it will be interesting to see, because Ford can pull all kinds of technical data off these cars now. So, big deal. And then also, we still have the Brazilian. We also have the Brazilian WRC team, and they're going to make their debut, like we said last week, at Portugal. So that's the deal right now in the World Rally Championship. Kind of a bridgeway into the to the Intercontinental Rally Challenge. Henning Solberg will do battle with brother Petter at Monte Carlo. So that we hadn't mentioned that yet, but Henning Solberg will drive an M Sport prepared S2000 Fiesta at Monte Carlo against his brother. So, yay.
Very nice.
Yeah, so that's all I have. Does anybody else want to say anything about Rally?
No, I don't have anything yet to add tonight. My head's full of IndyCar.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's too bad, really. You know what? All I got to say is the Lee Star season starts here coming up real soon. So.
Wow. You know, I think they said over 120 entries have been lodged for the Sweden round.
Yeah.
That would be throughout all classes and including the National Series that's racing in conjunction with the International World Rally Championship. So a whole lot going on there and a lot of interest, new manufacturers, new entries, new teams, new drivers. It's going to be fun to see how this season shakes out, just like we've been talking about. Sebastian Loeb may not have the run of the place because the Citroen may not be able to compare to the Ford early on.
Yeah. It'll be real interesting to see. I mean, Ford ran that S2000 Fiesta chassis all year last year. So, I mean, it's the same. It's basically the same chassis. And it's going to be awesome to see, you know, how it goes down. So I'm excited. All the experts are predicting a smash up year for the WRC, and maybe we can finally get back onto the top stage and stop this silly IRC WRC debate. You know, make sure that WRC is the top show in town. So, but awesome. So, but moving on, we go to Le Mans. We have some Porsche news. The 918 RSR.
Yeah, dude, this is quite the throwback. The 918 RSR was just unveiled at the Detroit Auto Show on Monday, and it has a lot of design cues from the 911, or the 917, sorry. Mm. Thank you. Porsche, when you just do numbers, it doesn't help me.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of design cues from that. This isn't a sanctioned car, you know, as far as ACO rules go. It's completely outside the ACO rule set. What they're trying to do is push their new supercar along with trying to make a category for it. This is an offshoot of the 911 GT3. Hybrid car that they had in contention the last couple of years, the flywheel car. Now, what's going on with this car? It delivers about 560 horsepower from its mid-engine mounted V8.
Okay.
But on top of that, it's got two electric motors on the front tires, which can give something around 200 additional horsepower, depending on the amount of, you know, energy recovery it can do, because it is a complete hybrid system, gasoline electric hybrid. Very cool looking car, and interesting to see where this one goes. Like we said, if this does get into Le Mans competition, it will be as a showpiece car. It's not going to be points contention or anything because it doesn't conform to any rule set. But what Porsche is trying to do is make a rule set, trying to define itself and get out early. So very interesting. This is the flywheel technology that Williams started. Williams sold it to Porsche. Porsche used it in their car, and now they're using another version of it in an even more interesting supercar that they're putting out.
I think it looks sweet.
Yeah, it's sexy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's
nice looking car.
It's got some nice features about it. And they also have a nice little video over at Speed, some videos over at SpeedTV.com showing it. So it's going to be awesome. Also for Le Mans, following up with what we were talking about last week, the ALMS TV deal. Yes, let's continue to kick the dead horse until it. We just want to make sure it's not breathing. But the ALMS series came out and said, or the ALMS series, that's dumb. The American Le Mans series. Came out and said that ESPN will not be the only home, ESPN3.com will not be the only home for the Le Mans races, and that you will be able to have them streamed and on demand from their homepage, so the American Le Mans Series website. So do not fret, friends.
It's certainly going to be very accessible. And, you know, as many people as want to bash the new TV deal, yeah, maybe the new TV deal isn't great, but what it is you are paying for TV, and you have been for years. So maybe this is a cheaper alternative than trying to pay for, you know, live coverage on speed and this, that, and the other. You go to their website, though, and you can get access to these races. You can get it on demand. You can get it streaming. There's no real excuse. If you're a Le Mans fan, you can get the racing.
Mm-hmm. One way or another, yeah.
You know where it's at every time, too, because you don't have to go through a conglomeration of 2, 3, 4 different networks that are carrying it. So,
yeah, true statement. So it's good stuff. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm ready for Le Mans Season 2. Might actually have some good stuff for Sebring this year. So we'll just have to wait and see. But... All right, well, floating back over to the Formula One side of the house, so Hispania's out of FOTA. Gee, tell me it's not so.
When I first saw the reports of this, you know, before any additional details came out, you know, Hispania's out of FOTA, and I went to my Formula One buddy at work, and I said, hey, here's the deal. Hispania's out of FOTA. I said, what do you want to bet? They are out of FOTA because FOTA requires a fairly large entry fee.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, come to find out, they were delinquent on their payments.
Oopsie.
For their 2010 dues. And, they're not being let back in. So FOTA Hispania basically said, well, the reason we're out is because FOTA doesn't really represent the small teams. It's for big teams. What it is for teams that have money.
Exactly.
You apparently don't.
Exactly. Got to pay the piper, my friends. You will not benefit from the rules if you don't pay.
Of an entry fee, though. 100,000 euros just to enter FOTA.
Yeah.
It is Formula One, and these guys don't play with small money. And, you know, you really have to have a budget somehow, and that's probably the only way they get money for their budget. So...
awesome.
I Hispania's for sale. They've already said that they're not going to have their car at the first test. They're going to have their 2010 car, but that's kind of mitigated because several teams have come out and said that. Moving on.
Nice. Well, on to Jonathan Summerton, perhaps. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Summerton has been floating around a bit. His name got popped up on an article on Pit Pass, and I thought it was interesting because really there's nothing new in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
He would like to drive an F1. He hardly drove anything last year except maybe some Indy Lights stuff, you know, some here and there stuff, but nothing consistent. It's great that, quote, Jonathan Summerton says, "My dream and goal has always been Formula One. I know I can do it. I've raced against 7 of the current F1 drivers, including Vettel." Okay, great. Wonderful. You've done that in the Euro Series and all that kind of stuff. Here's the problem. You aren't racing currently. I don't see how the fact that you may have missed an opportunity of getting in with US F1 really has much bearing on this situation.
Yeah.
Right now, last season, you didn't get to race much. You haven't been, you know, continuing to develop. And right now, the only viable place your name is really going to get mentioned is maybe, you know, some IndyCar feeder series stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's,
for the most part, you don't qualify for a top seat in IndyCar. Qualify for a top seat in F1 or for any seat in F1?
Exactly. It's a good point because, you know, I mean, if you look at those guys who are driving, I mean, even when they don't make Formula One, they go back to the feeder series, which they, you know, had come from. If you look at the one gentleman, I forget his name, from, I think it was Formula Renault, was making a run at the IndyCar, or not the IndyCar, mm-hmm. poo. He was making a run at Formula One, and, you know, he didn't make it. And now he's going back to Formula 3.5. So, you know, I mean... You've got to stay active as a driver. You can't, I mean, as always, I always, you know, the guy's good and I like, and his tweets and stuff are motivational. I like, you know, I like to hear him. But here's the deal, of course, you know, they're not going to come to you. You have to make yourself an entity to them. You have to make yourself fit in there. And that's, and you know, whether or not he thinks that's just strictly through money or not, you know, I don't know, but you know, you need to be in a car.
Yeah.
So, well, I don't know. I agree.
You throw in there, you've got guys like Alexander Rossi. You've got guys like Connor Daly, who also are highly touted young drivers in the American Feeder Series ranks. And you know, it's going to be tough to distinguish yourself from them, especially if you're not driving. So.
I agree for sure. And yeah, so sorry. Hope the best, though. Really, I do. But also for Formula One, we're looking at some launches for some new cars. You know, it is that time of year, getting into January, mid-January now, and we're getting into, you know, car launches and stuff like that. And it looks like Ferrari has picked February 1st for their launch date.
Yeah, Ferrari's gung-ho about their launch and saying they're months ahead of where they should be, and they're really excited about the developments they've got going on next year's car and whatever. that's really great, because you haven't seen what Adrian Newey's going to pull out of his bag.
Exactly. His little bag of tricks.
Yeah. The first test for the year is February 1st. Hmm. So, yeah, we expect all the cars to launch the week before.
Hmm.
At least paint schemes and everything. You know, you can't be too ridiculous. You can't have everything launched, but could be fun to see.
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of cars are on pace to for sure, you know, be launched on time. But McLaren is going to be starting their test with a new or with a I'm sorry, an interim tub. So that'll be interesting. It's not going to be the finished product from them.
Yeah.
So, interesting. We shall see. So, but that's all we really have outside of more Vettel Ferrari in 2012. Now Vettel to Mercedes in 2012. How about we just say Vettel's going somewhere in 2012, and it may actually be right back to Red Bull. And if I was him, that's exactly where I'd go. So.
Yeah, it's getting kind of hard to say Ferrari's the best place on the grid right now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, so you want to drive for the most nostalgic team of all time, great, that's fine. But guess what? Are you really going to win races? Are you going to get, or are they just trying to lure you in so you can't beat Fernando again? So, you know, sorry, I know.
kind of funny.
Kind of a cheap shot on you there, but I'm just, you know.
No. Welcome to Ferrari, Mr. Vettel. We would like to give you this new driver's outfit. Oh, sorry. It still says Rubens on it.
Nice. That's awesome. Lap dog, that's not his call sign. But, yeah, we'll see. It should be a good year for Formula One. But now we are going to bring in our IndyCar rider who is patiently waiting. Patiently waiting for us to stop babbling. Are you still there, IndyCar writer?
I'm still here.
So this,
I was just listening to you guys talk.
I see. So this is your second week that is non-intern status. So congrats.
You survived
this long. So
I know, and you haven't fired me yet.
The last one we had didn't make it too far, so. But you've done well. You've proven to be the exception. So, but let's see. Well, we did have some IndyCar stuff happening today. A lot of not really barn burning news, but just a lot of stuff.
A lot of little stuff.
Yeah, which then turns into a full sheet of show notes stuff. So,
the intern turned higher likes to be very thorough.
Oh, okay. Nah. Well, fair enough. We need that. We need more of that around here because, well, let's just face it. We are, in fact, well, me and Mike, at least, are not thorough. Doug, perhaps, more so than the rest of us. So, but, okay, so, all right, then, since you're so thorough, why don't you start taking us down through what we heard today at our press release for the State of the Series, or the State of IndyCar address.
Yeah, and it was the annual winter meeting. So, of course, if you're in Indianapolis, keep your eyes out. I know all the drivers, team members, they were all in town for this event. They came out with a lot of changes that we can look forward to for 2011. So if you're a fan, there's a lot of stuff that you can look forward to. The first thing they announced was the schedule. And the season finale was still to be determined. A lot of people were hoping we would see Las Vegas announcement today, but that was not the case. It's still being bounced around, and they're still guessing that it will be at Las Vegas, but no official news yet. We did see, however, that Edmonton has officially been added back on for July 24th.
Nice.
So Team Canadians can be happy.
Team Canada One said that beer was on the house for the day of the race. So my only question now is, how do we get there for some free beer? So, all right. Well, continue.
And they have some open test dates, where there will be testing at Barber in March, and then there will be testing also at Kentucky in May. And this was a little bit of extra news. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just throw in first chance on an oval there. I think it's very important that they actually have something on an oval before they actually get to Indy, and that at least is something.
Yeah, that will be. Give them a little practice before they get to Indianapolis.
Yes, a little.
Yeah. And then something that's been added this year to Iowa, Milwaukee, and New Hampshire, they will be actually having test time the day before the official practice begins. So like in Iowa, I know they're running on Friday and Saturday. So Thursday, they would have extra test time.
Okay. Interesting. So that means that everybody needs to set their travel plans for one day previous for those events.
If you're wanting to see them practice, yes.
Good. And why wouldn't you?
That's a good cost-cutting measure for the teams. Instead of traveling to a specific location to do testing, you travel to an event you're already going to, do a day of testing, and then you get into the event. I think it's a great idea, and it's something they've kind of kicked around in F1 about maybe staying after a day to do testing and so on to save the team's money. But that's a good idea in my mind.
Yes.
Well, and I think it'll be good for the rookies, too, to have that extra day. And then the next day, official practice starts, and then you have the race.
Yeah, and then there are some changes to the official practice, which you have later in the show notes, but let's throw them in now. There will be, you know, the practice sessions will be 75 minutes, the first 45 minutes of which will be rookie test time.
Nice.
Rookie and, lower in the points teams test time.
So that's stink at life teams.
Well, you know. Now.
I'm sorry.
Not everybody has Milka Duno.
Nice. Apparently she's not going to be around.
No.
So
Duno rules are flowing this time. We'll get into that later.
Okay. So, all right, go ahead and continue then.
Big news that actually came out on Twitter, I think last night was started to talk about. We have double file restarts on the ovals.
Yeah.
Which
oh boy.
Which they're going to start them close to the front stretch instead of turn 2 and 3. But the bad thing is they're not going to be removing lap cars. So whether you like the idea or not, this could be potential bad news.
Could be, because as we were just saying, granted, even though she's not going to be in the series, if you're not removing the lap traffic, okay, and say, Dixon and Power and Frankie get around Milka Duno somehow by the skin of their teeth without dying, and now you have her slotted in at P3, and then they have, you have more cars behind her, you know, when they drop the green flag, she's going to get absolutely ran over, and that could potentially cause a safety issue because, you know, she freaks out anytime anybody even gets close to her. And then let alone a whole field of cars trying to get around her, she may wig out. And, I mean, you're looking at like half the field's gone right there.
Hmm. I'm struggling with this one because, you know, I kind of like the idea of double file restarts, not to be all NASCAR or anything, but I kind of like the idea. It's mm-hmm. a little bit more interesting on the restarts, and then making them double file gives you a little bit more opportunity maybe to get around those lap cars because there are two lanes. Well, maybe not, because part of the reason that the single file restarts worked well with the lapped cars in there is that you had high or low. You could take a way around those cars, you know, early on. Well, if you're doing a double file restart on an oval that only has one line, well, everybody has to narrow down into one line, and oh my goodness, this could be interesting.
Yeah, it's I hope the best. I'm really open to the idea. I can even understand, well, why would you move the lap cars to the back just so they can turn around and get lapped again? Well, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's going to be interesting to see how it works and what they do if something does happen like that.
Yeah, I actually like Brian Barnhart's comment on it. He basically said the leader has earned the right to have those cars between him because he's passed them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Competition wise, I think I agree. However, okay, double file restarts. Let's ask the big question. Seriously, can you? Because you don't seem to be able to do a single file restart on road courses. You certainly can't do a start on ovals and road courses with too wide. It just doesn't happen. Everybody's strung out. You know, they're changing the way they do the starts. They're going to move the go cone from between 3 and 4 to some location on the front stretch. Apparently, they're going to move that to a location such that all cars will be on the front stretch before the leader goes.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd like to see along with this is actual policing of that go cone. If a car starts to accelerate before the cone, you don't do a yellow flag, wave off, whatever. You just send them to the back. Getting a little tired of it. You know, we can't have, you know, races where we have one start after another, or restart in this instance. And it just needs to be policed better, and we can deal with it. But if it's not policed, it's going to create a travesty on the television.
Yes. Well, we'll see what happens. What do you think, Christy? What about these double files?
I think I like the idea. They sound really good if they can pull it off, actually being double file going to restart. But I don't like the idea of the lap cars being in there for safety. And I'm same with Mike. I think for competition, it wouldn't be fair if the first three had to work to get around the lap cars and then the next few just get a bye when you move them to the back. But putting them in the middle, you put some slow cars in there and it could get kind of squirrely in there when you have them in front and back and on the side instead of just one in front and one in back. That's a lot of cars packed in.
And especially if you have like a, you know, like we said, milk is not there, but just think if you've got, we'll just say, for example, a conquest car and it's not handling well, you know, and then all of a sudden all these guys start shooting by them, car spins out, you know, again, there goes a lot of the field. I mean, what do you do at that point? I mean, you're going to have a lot of upset people because they shouldn't have been in the way in the first place, but yet they should have because it's not fair that you put them at the back and then get them lapped again. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with this one for sure. So, all right. Well, what else do we have that came out?
Hitbox order will now be determined by your previous weight race qualification order. And it's just, I think the way it was read was you can pick your pit box. So it won't necessarily be lined up mm-hmm. by that way. I think it's just depending on how you pick it. And it's same race, same, you know, if it's a road and street, they'll go to the one before. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with St. Pete. And also, I believe Texas will be the first one after Indianapolis, if they use Indianapolis rules for Texas or they do their own. But Indianapolis will be the exception that will be based on how they do it in years past. That one won't change.
They did address that St. Pete will be based off of entrant points from last year.
Okay.
Then, of course, Indy will be based off of the way Indy always does it, which is they pick pit positions based on qualifying order, because there's plenty of time between this, the end of qualifications and the race, so that they can shuffle the pits.
All right.
But I have no idea on Texas. I would assume you're correct, Christy, that they'll go on from Indy and use Indy's qualifying order to determine Texas's pit boxes.
Yep.
All right.
One other note on pit stops, because there's one other thing that was thrown in. They've addressed the whole situation of, when you come off the track, when you actually commit to come into pit, when you leave the track surface, there was kind of a dead zone in there. If after you left the track and after you started to decelerate, but you hadn't hit the pit lane line yet, if a yellow came out in that time, you couldn't pit. But you had slowed down for the pit, you couldn't pit. Well, now they've changed it. So once you commit, once you leave the track surface, if a yellow comes out, you will be able to go ahead and pit. That's quite a change, and it's a good one, because too many cars were just totally caught out by that in years past. It'll be interesting to see the unintentional consequences, as Brian Barnhart is prone to say, because they may get a pretty unfair advantage from that.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see how that one goes.
Interesting. You're right. Okay. Next up.
The Milkaduno rule of being within 107% has now changed to be 105%, which, cross your fingers, we won't have to worry about this year.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a problem. Unless, now I know, or what was it? I thought there was a race last year where Simona may have been close to that. As well, like there was a problem with her car and it was way off the speed, but aside of that, I mean, I don't think you're right. I don't think that'll be too many issues. It seems as though they're working their hardest to eradicate the one that has caused a lot of these rule changes, but it also shows Randy Bernard's what he was saying, making sure that the show is top-notch and that the drivers are the best they can be and not some people just putting around, logging laps like a Marty Roth or whatever.
Well, even at 105%, if you've got a track with a lap time of 60 seconds, you only have like 2 or 3 seconds of play there between the top qualifying speed and the 105% line. This isn't just, the top drivers in the world. It's also the top teams in the world that Randy Bernard is kind of hitting on. And if teams aren't up to snuff, they're not going to be making it into these races.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. It's calling out the teams that the teams also have to bring a competitive product.
Yes. So, all right. Well, what else do we have on there? Or do you have anything else that you wanted to add to any of that?
Nope, I didn't.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
The final thing you might see on track changes, which was very interesting to bring up, is during the qualifying segment for road and street courses, the team will only be allowed one tire choice per segment. You have to pick reds or you have to pick blacks and stick with them the whole time. So this means you can't run blacks and then be out of the top six moving on, throw on reds, put on a quick lap, and you're automatically on to the next round, which I think will be a little bit of a game change when we come for qualifying.
Hmm. Okay, so just to get it right, is you're going to have in qualifying per session, you're allotted one type of tire. So if you want to run reds, we'll say you want to run reds in Q2, and usually, like last year, like you said, you would put on black tires and then you'd lay down a couple laps and then you'd come in at the very last second for reds and boom, you set like fast lap and then try to conserve all your tires to the last portion. So what you're saying now is if you decide to use red tires, those red tires, that set of red tires will not become disattached from your car.
Yes.
Until the next session.
Yes. You have to, if you're choosing reds to get in the second round, if you're hoping to use reds to get in the fast six, then you have to use those reds, red six the whole time, or the red tires to get in the top six. And then more than likely you won't have them to use, or they will be used for the final round for pole.
Okay. So you'll get, is it an IndyCar now? And tell me, it's one set of reds per session, per qualifying, right? Or is it as many reds as you want?
No, you get, is it three reds or two reds, Mike, for a race weekend?
I think now you got me on that one. I think for qualifying you have two sets of reds, but maybe it's three sets for the weekend. And
because you have to use one brand new sticker set of reds during the race. So I think that leaves you two for the qualifying.
Boy, but this is really going to, you know, make a mess of things, because there are people that would come out and try and run, you know, the first session on blacks, and they see that people are, you know, putting up much better lap times than them, so they have to switch to reds to try and, you know, move on to the next session. That is not going to be an option anymore, so you're going to have to figure out how well you're running on the reds before the session, and this is going to be an interesting interplay, because teams are going to be watching each other in practice to try and determine where they're going to be on reds and determine if they're going to run reds or blacks in a certain qualifying session, playing the gamble that they'll make it into the next session. And trying to preserve a good set of reds for the fast six if they're somebody who actually has a chance of, you know, competing in the fast six. Wow. That's going to be an interesting one.
Yes. Yes, it will. That's really cool. So thanks, guys. I'm now educated. So, all right. Well, was there anything else with the tires that we needed to cover, or was that...
I don't think so. I think we can move on to engine talk.
Okay, so that's all the on-track stuff there then.
Yeah, I think that's all the on-track changes we're going to see coming up in 2011.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hopefully it'll make the competition a little bit better.
Yeah, a little less predictable would be nice.
Yeah, it would be.
I think the qualifying, you know, especially the road and street qualifying as is going to, you know, it's already fairly unpredictable because of some of the funny things that people have to do to make it into the final session, and then they're not competitive because they don't have blacks. Well, this is going to make it even more unpredictable on the road street qualifying. So I think that's going to be an interesting addition to it. We talked about the double file restarts. Well, that's not going to be on the road and street courses. So that's, unfortunate, but that's the way things go. Hopefully on the road street courses, though, they play around with the starts, because I saw way too many starts on road street courses this last year where you didn't have a double file start to the race, not to mention restarts. And, you know, maybe a handful of cars were on the front stretch and they were going, but everybody else was kind of filtering through the last corner. It just made for some bad starts. So hopefully they can also move that go cone all the way down the front stretch to the line if they have to make the starts on road courses a little better this year.
Yeah. And I look forward to it. So do you have any final thoughts, Christy, on the on-track product?
No, it'd be nice to see a little bit more competition this year.
Yes.
Make it so not always just a Penske Ganassi show.
Yes, I agree.
It is. The Penske Ganassi 7 now.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Instead of wondering who's going to make what, now you get to deal with which one of the Penske Ganassi boys isn't going to make the fast six.
So. You were saying, Christy? You were saying? Anyway.
All right. So, Christy, what else do we have then? There was also some 2012 stuff, actually. Now, I know that most of this stuff is 2011, but for 2012, we had a couple things in talks with the new Aero kits and the engine stuff as well. So, care to hash that?
Yeah, it looks like the engines, the displacement is going to be changed from 2.4 liters to go down to 2.2.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to throw in there, they said part of that was they were looking at, engine manufacturers and their discussions and talking about it, and they decided they're trying to push it as much as they can. So they moved it to 2.2 liters. That's probably going to up the RPMs on the engines. I think they said 12,000 before. I don't know if they'll be able to stay at 12,000 or not. At 2.2 liters. We'll have to wait and see what that comes out at. On top of that, they're talking about they have to make sure, though, that whatever they do with the engine format, they also make it possible for them to maintain the mileage requirements for the engines, the longevity of the engines, and so forth. So it sounds like they've continued on with their engine discussions, and this is what they've come up with. That's all.
Well, thank you.
Throw that on out.
All right, and what else do we have?
The aero kits, Tony Kottman said that he expects 4 different aero kits, which, if you're keeping track, that means we have maybe one more announcement to come in.
Yeah.
With a full announcement expected late in October of this year. But one thing that was added, it requires a 2-year commitment, a minimum of a 2-year commitment for these aero kit manufacturers.
Oh, nice. So you can't just make one and be like, that wasn't really worth our time. We're going to go ahead and bounce.
Yep. So. You have to at least be here for 2012 and 2013.
Interesting. So
Kurt Cavan threw out on his Twitter that the full rules for the engine package and the full rules for the aero kits were made available to interested parties. However, they're not being made available to the media currently. So the full rules have now been published.
Oh, nice.
To those who need to know.
Yes.
And you don't need to know.
Yes. So do we have any speculation, Chris T, on who the fourth, maybe the fourth aero kit would be? Because let's recap. It's what, Lotus, Dallara, Chevrolet, and who?
I haven't heard a fourth one.
You know, they keep hitting on the aerospace angle. We've heard Lockheed, we've heard Boeing, thrown around by the IndyCar series. I think they may have some interest from somebody in that sector, but they can't say it out loud yet.
Yes. Well, if you're dealing with them.
If I had to guess, that would be my guess. The only other thing that we could throw out would be somebody like Swift or one of the chassis manufacturers, you know, the Panoses and such.
Panos would be sweet.
That would be sweet.
Okay, so we're thinking that maybe something out of Boeing or Lockheed.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting. Boeing doesn't sound nearly as – because I think of Boeing and I think of, like, giant 747s and stuff, and I'm like, that's not very – fast.
That looks like throw us all for a loop and it'll be Airbus.
Nice. That'd be nice. But I think if you associate a name like Lockheed, you know, Lockheed specializes in fighter jets. I mean, so something pretty sporty and potentially wicked cool armed with heat-seeking missiles, could be in the horizons. Push this.
You can hear the spotters now. You got a bogey on your 6.
This isn't a push the pass button. This is a heat-seeking missile launcher. So, all right. Well, that will be interesting. So, all right. Moving on. What else do we have?
A couple things aren't brand new surprises. They talked about the new official IndyCar, which is in all caps. Name.
Now there you go.
Shouty caps lock.
There you go, trying to be like NASCAR with your double file restart and your big capital letters. You cannot do that. That is copyright infringement. We can't spell that.
Yeehaw!
But
yes, which is, it's not abbreviated for anything. It's just IndyCar.
Yes.
Yes.
Which which we refer to it as IndyCar in all caps, whereas most of our compatriots will not do that. So yeah, we're with the times.
So IndyCar all caps is the sanctioning body, and capital I Indy Y capital C A R is how you would refer to it as the IZOD IndyCar series. So yeah, it'll make for some confusion, but it won't be too bad. IndyCar, as it is shown on their new logo, which is kind of a, you know, it's pretty much the current IZOD IndyCar series car on the tilted surface. You know, it used to be the red, white, and blue, but now it's the red, white, and black. It's kind of that same thing, except it's a little bit more stylized. The only thing that's really different on it is the car kind of bounces out past the sides of the box of the logo, and the roll hoop is no longer filled in because it's no longer a naturally aspirated engine. It's an open roll hoop a la Champ Car, and that will be dead sexy when we get to see it.
Well played.
On a car.
What the hell are you even talking about? What else are you going to see it on?
Conceptual photos. Because that's right. What we've been seeing up till now.
All right, whatever. Confusing me, Mike. My small IndyCar brain is fragile.
Get more sleep.
I can't help it. So, all right, well, moving on. What else of the kind of administrative stuff came out?
There will be a new IndyCar office open in LA area in Santa Monica.
Rock.
So does this mean we will see a brand new Driven the Second?
Nice.
Go sly.
Yes. Hey, I'm all about it. Sly Stallone. Let's do this. So, Driven 2, possibly the worst movie he ever did.
Yeah, they have a new vice president of corporate marketing, or something silly like that. You know, one of those long vice president titles. Apparently, this lady was involved with NASCAR's side, and she did all kinds of media relations and everything, and helped from NASCAR's standpoint in movies, great movies such as Ricky Bobby.
Go fast!
Herbie the Love Bug, whatever that travesty that Disney put out was. And Talladega Nights is Ricky Bobby, right?
Yeah.
And there was another one. But anyway, and then several of their reality TV type programs and what have you. So this lady's been involved with and has contacts in Hollywood, so who knows what happens with that.
In other news, I now have a job in Santa Monica. I need to apply so I can move out there. I think Santa Monica would be fit my personality more so than St. Louis. It's cold outside. It's 2 degrees, man, and I just checked a second ago and it said zero. What the hell is that? Who does that? Who moves to places like this?
With about 6 to 8 inches of snow.
Well, you may have got the worst end of that one. I think we only got about 3 or 4, so.
Yeah, that's where we sit as well. It all fell today.
Nice.
White Death 2011 in the greater Columbus area.
Nice. Well, people up on your neck of the woods already don't know how to drive, so I couldn't imagine get some snow on the ground. I remember driving with some of those crazies on the interstate going to mid-Ohio. You gotta be kidding me. Shaking head, Mike.
I'm confused.
Your people in your state. A lot of them. Not all of them, but some of them.
Let's get some things straight.
Proper driving skill.
I claim my state of birth. Well, actually, I don't do that. I claim my state of growth.
Nice. Well, that's okay. I do as well. So, I'm sorry. I forgot. You don't like to be referred to as an Ohioan.
Yeah, I'm still not comfortable with that.
All right. Well, all right. Enough of our sidetracking. But yeah, I want to go to Santa Monica. I need a job. IndyCar, help me help you. So... All right, and what else do we have? And it looks here as though it says that, and this is not new, but it says that it was confirmed today with the whole IZOD seeing their return on investment at 350%.
Yeah.
Dude, that's impressive.
That's a big number right there. So yep. Hopefully, they said that 14 new partners have been added in the last year. So hopefully they see that number that IZOD's throwing up and we'll get more sponsors interested.
More money in the series and get us out of debt.
That would be nice.
They did name a new corporate sponsor today, and that was Starwood Suites as their hotel, the official hotel chain of the IndyCar series. And that would include, like, what, the Westin and what else? I don't know. That's not my thing.
I forget what it is. But if it's Westin, that rocks, because I stayed in some Westins, and they're pretty nice hotels. So I give it the seal of approval. I'll start staying there all the time. So remember, it's all about taking care of the people who take care of our sport. So
indeed.
If they want to spend the money to be the official hotel partner, then by God, I'm going to stay there.
We're no longer looking at you, Firestone.
Yes. Whew, yeah. Not yeah, buying those.
Discussion.
Yes. That was actually not covered today.
Yeah, well, let's throw this out as an aside so we don't have to cover it later or talk about it later. Firestone said they might be interested in sticking around the series if they get a more adequate compensation for their tires. Currently, they're subsidizing the tires because it's a marketing expenditure, and they're not really interested in doing that anymore. And what they're thinking would be about $900,000 for a tire lease. The current tire lease, depending on the source, I think Robin Miller said $380,000, and Cavan and some others are saying $300,000, so I don't know where to believe, but you're talking about an addition of something like $500,000 to the current tire lease, and that just is untenable, because you just got around that whole issue by getting cheaper engine leases and cheaper cars. So now you're going to make the tires more expensive and it's a zero-sum game. No, that's not going to happen. So hopefully something can be solved in this issue.
Interesting. Yes, I do find that. But, you know, I can understand from Firestone's aspect as well, tired of spending the money on, you know, the cars or on the tires and just, you know, for your own marketing purposes when I already am not buying your tires anyways. I don't care what you do. Yes. So, you know, I can understand that they need to start trying to think about running a business. However, you cannot run that kind of business with those kinds of prices that are being quoted to these teams that are already doing good enough, you know, just to get to, you know, half the races a year.
Well, it's bad enough the prices you quote to me when I come in to get tires changed. I don't want to be one of these teams. Firestone has some brand imaging problems like you were bringing up last week. Maybe they need to be focusing more on convincing people that their tires don't fail under high-speed blowout conditions instead of racing at Indy.
Yes. Our tires don't blow at Indy at 230 miles an hour, but if you get your Ford SUV up to 55 on the highway, you're going to get catapulted like you got shot out of a cannon.
Okay, that's enough negativity.
Yes.
On to more positive IndyCar glowing stuff. Everybody go to your happy place.
Well, if you're a fan of Indy Lights, this might be really good news to hear. They talked about a TV deal, and a lot of people have debated if they're going to leave Versus, but they're not. We're going to be sticking again this year with ABC and Versus. ABC will be airing the St. Pete race, Indy 500, Milwaukee, New Hampshire, and the season finale, which we're guessing will be Las Vegas. All the other races, including the Indy 500 qualifying, which is great for us who can't get to the qualifying, we get to watch it live, those are all be covered on Versus. And added just today, they said the Firestone Indy Lights races will be shown on Versus at 6 p.m. the Wednesday following the race. So even though they're not going to be seen live that weekend, this gives, you know, TV time to the Firestone Lights race, which I mean, that's going to be big for fans, for drivers, for new sponsors trying to get into the series. This is a huge benefit for the Firestone Indy Lights.
I'm excited because I'm going to watch them. So I don't care what time they're on. I like to watch those races. They're pretty good. However, it'll be interesting because a lot of the drivers who I like to watch may be graduating to IndyCar. So, woo-hoo. Yeah.
Yay.
Well, then you can find new drivers to like.
I don't know. That may be asking a bit much.
Well, who knows? You've got some interesting things coming online. Connor Daly is going to be doing some time in Firestone Indy Lights next year. He is probably going to be taking the spot. It sounds like they announced it today, and then Connor Daly said, huh? Yeah. But he's going to be driving the road course portion of the Sam Schmidt entry that is being fielded for Brian Clausen, the USAC champion. Interesting.
Yeah, that should prove interesting. I like that. I'll watch that all day because Connor Daly, I think, will dominate.
Well, Connor Daly, Jonathan Summerton, hey, you need a ride next year, and it's not going to be with F1, so maybe you should get into Indy Lights.
Nice.
Anyway.
All right. Yeah, so I will choose him, and we shall watch him. So.
What's this about the TV crew?
Yeah, I thought, well, interesting, because people have been talking about Lindy Thaxton.
Yeah.
She hasn't said for sure she's coming back. And it was announced today that the Versus crew will not be solidified until after the Comcast Embassy merger happens, which should probably be sometime next month. So we might see some new faces in Versus, and they might stay the same. So it'll be interesting to see.
Oh, they can have Robbie Buell.
Oh, God. Please,
take
no.
Take him away, please.
Please.
He's a nice enough guy, but yeah. Anyway, but oh, I would hate to lose Lindy Thaxton. She is just a joy to listen to.
How did I not know that was going to come out of your mouth?
No, seriously. I mean,
I love Lindy Thaxton.
Nah, none of that.
wake up, dreamer.
I hate to be denigrating to women who do television announcing for masculine-dominated sports. But for the most part, they tend to be very pretty but not very knowledgeable about the sport, or at least that's the conclusion a lot of people have. Lindy Thaxton is the exception, and she is a fantastic person to be representing for the IndyCar series, and I would hate to lose her because I think she does a very good job.
Well, and she's on Twitter talking to the fans, too. So when you're seeing her on TV, you know, she's not just up there. You can actually, you know, feel like you know who she is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that. I'm interested to see what happens with this Comcast-NBC merger. We've heard a lot about it. They actually addressed it in the press conference today and said that they should know within the next month. But what does that do to the IndyCar series? Do we get, you know, right away? Do they jump right into some sort of NBC sports channel? Is that months down the road? We don't know, and we can't make any projections or whatever on it. However, if Versus is being told not to solidify crew until after it's over, that means they're pretty sure it's going to happen, and they have plans.
Yeah.
So that's a tell, and it's interesting. So, what about kids?
Yeah, the IndyCar series must be doing a lot for the families, because they said children ages 9 and up will be now allowed in the garage areas, except for Texas. But so if you want to bring your kids and go to the garage areas, I mean, that'll be great. That's going to build your fan base right there. If those kids can go and see those drivers, get pictures with them, and see kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff, I think that'll be great.
Yeah, and let's throw this into another direction, too. When you take your kids into the garage area, okay, drivers aren't terribly interested in letting, you know, some 30-year-old guy like me sit in the car. However, they may be more than interested to let my 10-year-old son sit in the car or something of that nature. You know, it brings on extra opportunities for interaction, and that's really what they're trying to promote with that. Getting the kids into the garage area gives them a chance to see it up close, to hear the engines roar. You know, I'm excited about that, and I can't wait till my son's 9.
Yeah, I have farther ways to go than you do with my kids.
He's just 7 now, so give him 2
years. My oldest is 4, so it'll be a few years. But she got to meet Marco last year, and so she couldn't stop talking about that for the next couple months because she got to see Marco.
My brother's kids got to meet Danica, and right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you like Danica or not, they are enamored with her because Danica spent time with them. And they're huge Danica fans now because Danica just spent a little bit of time with them. And that's just, you know, it's key for kids to if they see the driver as accessible, they're going to enjoy it far more. And that's great. Okay, so the Indy 500 is coming up, and all kinds of wackiness was announced today regarding what's going on with the Centennial Indy 500. So how about you take us through this point by point, Christy, and let us know what we have to look forward to this coming Indy 500.
Well, to start off, we have the Centennial Tour that's going to be visiting troops overseas. And I believe Martin Plowman is for sure one of them because we've been hearing him tweet about that stuff. So
I think Sarah Fisher's on that one as well.
Yeah, so that'll be kind of a nice way to kick that off before the season. And I think that's a great thing that those drivers are doing.
Yeah, indeed.
And then, but that's older news. That's been announced for a while, and they've been doing press over that. But announced today, those of you who like to collect worthy things, it will be a Sports Illustrated commemorative issue dedicated only to the anniversary of the 500.
That's pretty sweet.
That is pretty cool.
I think my little bag that has the program from the Centennial 500 will also have that Sports Illustrated edition nicely packaged in there with it.
Yes. Now the question will be if we will see Danica Patrick in a swimsuit in that issue.
No. I hope not.
You had to go there.
Sports Illustrated IndyCar, it has to come up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And also announced, though, the postage stamp with Indy 500. And I don't know if the actual – I haven't seen the actual stamp.
Yeah, it's a stylized Marmon Wasp.
Oh, nice.
So very cool.
Yeah. Also, they are going to try to have at Indy come May 70 of the surviving 74 winning cars to show off.
That is sweet. I'm psyched for that. I think that will be really cool for them to have on display because they're bringing in the actual cars. They've got a couple of cars in the museum that are replicas, but they're bringing in all these actual cars and everything of that nature. Pretty cool. Most of those are housed in the museum already, but that said, there are plenty of them that aren't, and they're going to be accessible and on display, not just ensconced in the subterranean levels of the museum.
Yeah, so if you like history, this is a great race to go to because IMS is also inviting all the living Indy 500 vets back, which is 269, which will make it the world's largest autograph session, which will be the Saturday before the race.
That will be pretty cool too.
I think you had the plan to spend a couple hours there.
How do you actually go about approaching an autograph section with 270 people?
I don't know. You have to rotate.
I'm going straight for the Mario line. Don't even matter.
Yeah, you made the comment about the 70 surviving cars. Also, they have announced that they will have 400-year-old cars actually doing demonstration laps on track. On race day, The Marmon Wasp will be taking laps on race day this year. I am so excited about that. That is going to be so cool to see. Sorry, I'm getting a little teary.
You're fired. How dare you embrace history? Who does that?
People who learn from it.
Yes, true statement. True statement. All right. Well, they also said today that there were going to be hopefully two, 2012 Dallara show cars at one oval, one road course on display in May at the 500. So we will actually get to see a car, not a stupid hologram.
Or a foam model.
Yes, or a foam model that looks weird and gets made fun of.
And no place for the driver to sit.
Yeah. So, well, I'm really excited about that, though. That will be the first place that I go, or one of the first places I go when I get there, is to see the 2012 show cars, because I'm really interested to see what all these new cool wavy designs and aero kits and stuff. I can't wait. 2012 is going to rock. So, so we should go. Actually, that's what we'll do. Standing order is that all OP personnel who are present at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway will have their pictures taken in front of the 2012 cars. So,
very nice.
Provided they're there.
It's going to happen.
So, it's yes. It's going to happen, man. No more standing on bleachers in the middle of a Steelville baseball field for us. We're doing it in front of real race cars. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
That brings us to the last point on your list, Christy. What is this?
Well, to make it even bigger, they're going to have a Mattel publicity stunt, which we can just only guess at what that's going to be.
What in the world is a Mattel publicity stunt? Who is Mattel?
Mattel
is
Toys.
Toys? Okay. What are they going to do? The longest gap jumped by a 2-inch long Hot Wheels car.
Nice. could have Ken Block try to jump one of the Hot Wheels painted Izod Indy cars over a 270-foot gap. That'd be awesome.
Flaming. Flaming.
Yeah. Flaming.
Yeah.
It's not cool unless it's flaming.
Welcome to Indianapolis. We play hard. That'd be sick.
Oh, man.
Anyways, enough of that.
Most unique flyover ever. Okay. Yeah. Yes, okay. Sean, maybe you can help. Is there any new exciting military technology that they might want to display at Indianapolis?
I heard it was going to be 5 Delta Wings.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, somebody put on the
flight of 5 Delta Wings.
Somebody put on the Twitter 5 Delta Wing prototypes.
I don't know, man.
That was amazing.
It probably needs to be 4 and a missing man formation.
Nice. I don't think we'll have anything. The only thing that I could possibly think of is some old school airships from, like, you know, when the Indy 500 first started. That would be kind of most unique. You would probably never see that anymore. Or it would
How
be
about a Zeppelin.
That's what I was thinking, like a Zeppelin kind of thing. Some kind of airship that's not a blimp, because those are a bit more modern. But definitely some kind of balloon craft. Or it could be something like a heritage flight. I don't know if they've ever done that before, but basically that's like you take all the planes maybe that have flown over the 500 before, because you've had like Harriers, F-18s, all that stuff. And then you just kind of take the flyovers of the 500 all the way back as far as you can go, and then just kind of show it through history, kind of mature, would be something that I think that we could see. But who knows? So, shall be interesting.
Okay. Well, the only other thing that we need to, That's the Indy Centennial information as we know it and as we have been able to discern. Going forward, though, we have a few other news items that we need to hit on. And first on the list would be the NASCARification of Kentucky.
Nice. Turn left.
Exactly. Well, if you have been to Kentucky the last couple of years, it was taken over by SMI, and they have been very much updating the track, updating the facilities around the track, adding in, you know, giant bathrooms and this, that, and the other. The only thing to note is they're increasing seating capacity. I think the current seating capacity is somewhere around 80,000. It's going to be increased to about 106, with two new spectator tower areas for seating. If you thought it looked empty for the IndyCar race last year, it's probably going to look even worse this year, unfortunately, because the stands are getting bigger. And last time I checked, the crowds were shrinking at Kentucky for IndyCar races. Oh,
oh no.
I hate that. I really do. But it is what it is. NASCAR is moving forward, and SMI is moving forward with their plans because they have a NASCAR date this year, and Kentucky's going to look really small crowd this year because of it, unfortunately. Unless everybody suddenly has this giant resurgence of popularity in IndyCar, which we all hope for, but we have to be realistic and honest.
Interesting. Christy, what about Kentucky? Do you like that place?
I would like to go out there. I actually want to see the race.
Yes. I told you, Mike, that I was going to try to make it out there, right?
Yeah.
Because it was only as far as Indianapolis, pretty much. Maybe a little bit further, but not much.
I tell you, Kentucky is a great place to see a race. I've thoroughly enjoyed the times I've gone there, and it's a great place to go and set up and tailgate before the race. And moving to October is a little interesting this year. It's an afternoon race instead of a night race. So. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully get to go this year. I haven't decided on that one. Kind of have to play it by ear because it's not on the master list of races that I've told my wife I'm going to yet.
Nice. Well, Christy, you had an article that came out about some driver stuff that happened earlier in the week. Care to fill us in? I think we kind of already knew a lot of it, but go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, Victor Mir is officially back at Foyt, which it was rumored he would be there anyway. He's back for his third season, but last year was his first complete season. After he crashed in the 2009 Indy 500 with back injuries, he was out for the rest of the season. So hopefully they can improve. I think last year he had a podium finish at the season opener down in Brazil, and it'd be nice to see him back on the podium at least one more time this year. Kind of mix it up with the drivers we are always seeing on the podium.
Tweetor. All right, and who else?
Yes, indeed.
Who else?
Oh, and ABC Supply is coming back with Foyt.
All right.
So they'll be returning.
Good.
And then James Rossiter could be a new face we see. And if that sounds familiar, that name... He tested last year for KV, thinking that they might be slipping him into the third seat, but that deal didn't follow through, and then we saw Mario Moraes in that seat. But he is back, and he is linked with Lotus. And being a kind of a test driver over their development driver for Lotus Motorsport, and with their connection with KV Racing, we could see him at a few road and street tracks, possibly. So I don't know if this is working into the 2012 season or if it's just kind of a deal they're working out with him. So it'll be interesting to see what becomes of that.
Yes, that is interesting. Don't really know which direction they're going with on that.
Yeah. So, Another bit of news that kind of came out we saw today, but nothing's official yet, but Oriel Servia was walking around wearing a Newman Haas shirt.
And he was at their shop last week, I believe, doing some work with them. So who knows?
Well, well, well. You can finally rest easy, Michael.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I knew you would be.
Well, and then they said that Hinchcliffe was on a family vacation, so he wasn't there for physicals, but he would be coming later, I believe, in the week. But somebody asked him, and he's not confirmed yet, but they're working on it. So
yeah.
And the day is mine.
Yeah, I mean, this whole winter meeting, you know, the State of the Union was thrown into this one, and it's brand new. But in the past, we've kind of looked at this winter meeting, you know, we looked to see what drivers showed up. Because if a driver had a legitimate shot at a seat, they were going to be there to get, you know, get signed up. It's interesting, Catherine Legg showed up today, which is kind of out of left field. She's been off driving sports cars in Europe. But she showed up. So maybe somebody has a line on a race for her, or who knows what else. Yeah, this is when they set their baselines for their, you know, for their brains and everything like that, because they have to know what their brains should look like after they hit a wall. They can compare.
Squash.
Exactly. Well, we're talking about the electrocardiograms and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, very cool. Any information that comes out from this, usually they do all the driver headshots and you know, all the imposing looking bump things that they do in TV where, you know, yeah, Will Power is standing, you know, over his car in this, you know, haughty looking pose and whatever. And they're going out from commercial when Will Power is leading the race. All that stuff gets filmed now. So who knows?
Nice.
Nobody saw Dan Walden there.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, I think they were looking for him, and at least what I saw on Twitter, they asked if anybody'd seen him, and he hadn't been accounted for.
Boy, that has me concerned, because I've been putting a lot of stock in all the rumors that he's going to be back at Andretti, which I think would be fantastic for both Dan Walden and for Andretti.
I agree. That'd be awesome. So, good fit.
But maybe he has an excuse. Maybe he's on vacation, too. So.
Yeah, it could be. Well, what do you got here about a certain Mr. Harbaugh there, Mike?
Oh, I just want to give a shout out to Jim. I mean, Captain Comeback.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Oh, come on.
For crying out loud.
Yeah, I became a Colts fan when he was pitching for the Colts, and I'm still a big fan of his. And you gotta say he's done well for himself in his post NFL career. I mean, really, he didn't have a stellar NFL career, but since then, he's now part owner of Panther Racing, and now he's going to be coaching for the San Francisco 49ers, who apparently need a coach after Singletary single-handedly decimated the team this year. Anyway.
All right. And then what else was it I seen about that weird Indianapolis, the ORP is now what, Lucas Oil Raceway?
Yeah. Okay. Indianapolis Raceway Park became O'Reilly Raceway Park, and nobody called it that because it was ridiculous, because everybody knew it as IRP. Now they're going to call it Lucas Oil Raceway. And everybody will continue to call it IRP because it doesn't make any sense to call it anything else. So, sorry, I think you wasted your money again there, sponsor.
So we're gonna go to Lucas Oil Raceway, another place where the Colts can go to lose.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Case in point, Invesco Field at Mile High. Who calls it that?
Yeah, seriously, it's Mile High.
It's Mile High.
Yes. That's like when they started saying, like, the All-State at the Brickyard, you know, All-State at the Brickyard or something like that for the 400. I'm like, dude, it's the Brickyard 400. Get the hell out of here with that. What is that sponsorship of the name? So, yeah, it's always going to be IRP for me. So, or ORP, one of those two. So, another place where the Colts can go to get blown out.
Now.
Or barely beaten by my Jets. So... All right.
And well, if you recall, my prediction for that game was that the Colts would be going home.
Yeah, well, you always do that, hoping for the best, so that way when they do win and I lose, then you can be like, oh, we weren't even supposed to win that game. What now? And, yeah, I just really wouldn't be able to live it down. So.
Anyway, enjoy losing to the metrosexual Tom Brady.
Nice. I don't think so. There's some guy on Twitter who's already harassing Dustin Keller, the tight end for the Jets. I think I'm going to get in there and tweet back and start my own splinter cell kind of insurgent warfare on the Patriots fans. So,
oh, man.
Or the Patriots players tweet Tom Brady, "What's up, D-bag? Ready to get handled?"
I do have to say that it's good that the Colts are out of it, because I just can't take losing to the Patriots, and I just can't see how they could have won this game.
I don't think anybody thinks the Patriots will lose, but I'm confident in my team's ability. So, and that shall be my downfall. So I'll go down with the ship. I don't care. So,
oh, man.
But I can't wait for all the I can't wait for the I can't wait. So, yay! Bring it on! Bring on the Patriots! Let's kick the crap out of them.
One last note on the NFL before we close out the show. This past weekend's games, they all pretty much combined to get the highest ratings ever for playoff games.
Nice.
Something just amazing platitudes for it, you know, and wonderful. That's great and everything. Now, NFL players, union, owners, you got the CBA thing to work out. Don't screw this all up. It's a very easy thing to say. You have an excellent league and excellent your TV ratings are top. You are the biggest player on the block in the United States when it comes to sports. Don't screw this all up. Don't throw it away and become the MLB. Because we went through that. Hockey locked out for a year and became a shadow of their former selves.
Yeah.
It would really hurt football. So please don't screw it all up. Peyton, we know you're listening.
All right. Well, Christy, do you have any other football related stuff, since this has been more of an NFL podcast than a IRL? Or I'm sorry. Oh, I called it. Oh,
they, supposedly they actually
you're
brought
fired
the,
now.
Supposedly in the press conference, they brought out the old IRL logo and they blew it up.
Oh, nice.
And then they brought out the new logo.
That would be sick.
Now IndyCar.
I actually asked. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, your public enemy number one, IndyCar, has already decided that you shall not get press credentials after that slip.
Nice. Well, what was it? I messed that up. And so, and also the wrap up of the today's events is now on the website from Christy. Actually, I have to say to Mike, though, not you, Mike, but Mike, Team Canada, who has already commented, I really appreciate you saying that it was a great wrap up, but it's not my work. I accidentally didn't change the name on the post at first and had to go back and change it again.
No.
So yes, it was actually Christy's work, not mine. So I'm trying to steal it and make it look like I actually know what I'm talking about. So, but she was the one who did the article for all who've seen it. I apologize. Error on the editor's part. I am obviously batting zero tonight with the IRL reference and now stealing my writer's work. Yeah. So, yeah, go me. So, but I am, it's just been one of those weeks, and I'm definitely looking forward to the weekend. So, get me out of here.
Good deal. And with that,
yeah,
thank
and
you
on
for
the,
tuning in.
Yeah,
to the
on that bombshell. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to all the new Twitter followers throughout the day with the press conference. Really appreciate it. Thanks as well to the Facebook followers. You can follow us both on Facebook and Twitter. We will be back next week with more news and rambling and me and utter distress, because I'm going to be taking so much fan mail and hate mail over my Jets getting beat. It's going to be almost, I'm not going to be able to recover. So, so thanks. It's also WFP@openpaddock.net. So you can send me your hate mail about the Jets. So, but on that note, folks, say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next week.